You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Wednesday, December 31st, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live to tape, just steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the final show of 2014. It is a best of. I am on vacation now. Yes. You can only imagine the fighting that has gone on between my children and I. And frankly, my wife and I. We've been together now for days. We've been traveling.
For days?
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. I mean, I know I'm projecting into the future, but I know. I already know. I already know. So, ladies and gentlemen, what do we have for you today? Well, it is the final day of 2014, but more importantly, it is not 2015. And we thought perhaps it would be unfair to sully the beginning of 2015 with this interview. It is the only – we've had best ofs, and we're going to have best ofs this whole week that are – you know, I have decided based upon my sort of – my favorite policy interviews that we've had. And maybe not all have been policy. Some have been sort of like a little bit of culture. This one – it's just, I don't even know how to explain it, but let me give you a little taste of what we're talking about.
Despicable.
No, I know you wouldn't do it. Because
hey, shut up. It's my turn now, isn't it?
Okay. For longtime listeners of the show, you've now gone into like a state of ecstasy. And now you've understand, if people have heard it referenced over the year, at the beginning of the year, we were taking a lot of calls from libertarians. We interviewed a couple of different, you know, and I've interviewed, I don't know. At one point, I got an email from, I don't know if it was directly from Walter Block or it was like a CC'd, and somebody said, would you debate Professor Walter Block, the blah, blah, blah professor at Loyola Business School? And he interviewed, you know, emailed, and I said, sure, yes, I would. And I have to, I will confess right now that in leading up to this interview, I was like, I really got to get my ducks in order here because
Sam, you know, was really doing his homework for this.
Oh,
moment.
I mean, I was looking back into, you know, and actually it was good. I started to dig back into sort of neoliberal thought, into Hayek, and it was a good exercise for me because we ended up doing a lot of stuff on the sort of the neoliberal origins. You've heard some of that this week. But it, you know, I was like, this guy's a professor of business at Loyola, you know, this is a real, could be the real deal. And then at one point I Googled him and I found like, oh, wow, he's said some very controversial things about black people. And he's a, advisor.
And not very popular on like those Rate My Professor sites.
No, not very popular in that regard. But he's an advisor to Ron Paul. And went into the interview or the debate, I guess it was. And what happened was rather interesting. He was an interesting guy with some interesting ideas. And so today we are playing the entire interview. And then I think we're going to include, I think we will include a sort of segments that took place afterwards.
Yes, it was a very...
There was a lot of interesting responses to the interview that we're going
to
play.
It was wild, to say the least.
Yes, and... I don't know. We may interview him again in 2015, but maybe we won't. We'll see. All right. But in the meantime, enjoy this, folks. And you're going to hear what happened in the better half of the show. We're going to give it to freebies today. So if you wait, sometimes 8 or 9 months, sometimes you get a free better half. All right. Enjoy it. Have a great New Year's tonight, folks. 2015 is just moments away. All right, here it is. I interview with or debate with Professor Walter Block, and then what follows. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Professor Walter E. Block. He is the Harold E. Worth Eminent Scholar, Endowed Chair, and Professor of Economics at the Joseph A. Butt College of Business at Loyola University in New Orleans. Welcome to the program, Professor.
Sam, thanks, but the connection seems bad because I can sort of only hear like three quarters of your words.
Oh, I apologize. Let me call you right back. We'll try that again.
Give me your phone number too, in case somehow if I call you, it's better than if you call me.
All right, hold on for 1 second. Let me play some music and we'll be right back. Hold on for 1 second, sir.
Do you want me to hang up or?
All right, we are back. Let's try this again. Professor, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, sorry about that. All right, so we've exchanged emails in anticipation of our conversation today, and you've asked that I do my best.
Sam, I'm sorry. It's very bad. Give me your phone number. Let me call you.
We'll try one more time. I'll try.
A lot of static on the phone.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll try it one more time. Apologies, folks.
You wouldn't want to Skype, would you?
Okay, Professor, how's that?
Very good.
Okay,
very
great. Good. Apologies. So, so as I was saying, we in exchanging emails, you've asked me to do my best not to interrupt, and that we won't interrupt each other. And within the confines of the medium, I will endeavor to do so. And we agreed to start with the premise. Let me just get the, with the premise that the, why don't we start with the laissez-faire capitalism is the best system for mankind, both from an ethical and an economic point of view. So tell us why that is the case.
Well, just briefly, what laissez-faire capitalism is a voluntary trade between consenting adults. And every time a voluntary trade occurs, for example, if I trade my pen for your wristwatch, it must be that there's something about your wristwatch I like better than my pen, and there's something about my pen that you like better than your wristwatch, and therefore there's mutual gain, at least in the ex ante sense of anticipations. Ex post, one of us may regret the trade later, but at least in the initial outset, we are trading because we each expect a benefit. And this applies to barter and to buying and selling and renting and employment and every other contract investing in the market system. So it's mutually beneficial, and this is sort of a deontological proof of it, namely the logic. There's a lot of empirical evidence that attests to the fact that the countries that are closest to laissez-faire capitalism, namely have the most economic freedom, are also the richest. For example, Hong Kong and Singapore, in the empirical analyses, are the most free countries in the world, and they're among the richest. And from an ethical point of view, it's also beneficial because it's based on voluntarism, no coercion. If anyone pulls a gun on anyone else and forces him or compels him or prohibits him from doing anything in a commercial interaction, well, then that would be outside of laissez-faire capitalism. So what's inside laissez-faire capitalism is just voluntary interaction, and voluntary interaction is ethical.
Now, is it your sense that we don't have that type of a freedom to engage in exchange in this country?
Well, we've got some. When I first did my empirical research, in I think the first book was 1976, the U.S. was the fourth freest country. We're now, I think, something like the 15th or 16th freest country, which is pretty good out of, I don't know, 150 or 200 countries, but, you know, not as good as it could be. So we've got a modicum of economic freedom, although it is curtailed in many different ways.
So let's talk about how it's curtailed in your perspective.
Well, for example, take the minimum wage law. That curtails it in the sense that I now offer you a job washing my car or whatever at $6 an hour, and let's say you agree, and we can both go to jail for that. They probably wouldn't put you in jail because they would think I was exploiting you, but theoretically we could both go to jail because the minimum wage law is $7.25 an hour. And if we, two consenting adults, come to an agreement for $6 an hour, it's illegal. So our freedom to have an employment contract is, in that instance, a curtail.
And so how is that, how is the idea that I would get, I mean, when we talk about the minimum wage, the idea that I would get a living wage or a wage that could sustain me, how is that unethical? A, and how does it hurt us economically?
Well, I mean, let's say $20 an hour is a sustainable, or what did you call it, I forget?
A living wage.
Living wage, sorry. Let's say $20 an hour is a living wage, and I'm offering you six. Have I hurt you? Have I, in any sense, engaged in uninvited border crossing? Have I used coercion against you? No. I'm not worse in your position. I don't know what your situation is right now, in hypothetical. I'm not talking about you as an actual person, rather you as a theoretical person. I come up to you and say, hey, come work for me for $6. What do you say? And, you know, if you can make $20 an hour at a living wage, will you say, well, thanks for your offer, but no thanks, if you're a polite person. If you're not polite, you'll say something else. On the other hand, if right now your wage is, say, $2 an hour, you'll say, whoop-de-doo, $6, that's great. So I think that either I can't hurt you, or possibly I can help you. Now, it would be nice if you were making $20 an hour, and if you were, then my offer of $6 will just sort of flow off your back like water off a duck's back. You're not going to seriously entertain it. But I haven't hurt you. I haven't violated your rights. And I might have improved your situation if your situation was much more dire, namely, say, you were making $2 an hour, or you were unemployed and had no other job opening. $6 an hour is better than nothing.
Well, now, let's talk about, though, living people. I mean, when we talk about actual individuals, we know that in many instances, if you're making even, let's say, the minimum wage as it is now, never mind getting rid of it, many of those people cannot afford to feed their families without government assistance. They can't afford to get health care without government assistance. You know, we're all well aware of, you know, the stories of how many Walmart workers are required to get nutritional assistance and medical assistance. We also know that in the case of, you know, I mean, so I'm not sure how it's unethical that someone would receive a higher minimum wage. But also from an economic standpoint, we know that just there was a report today that I saw that raising the minimum wage will actually put an additional $35 billion. I mean, specifically when we're talking about the $10.10 an hour, it'll increase the wages of almost 29 million workers by $35 billion. And it will increase economic activity. How is that bad for the economy, and how is that unethical?
Well, I think it's bad for the economy because right now, let's say there's somebody who's making $9 an hour. Right now, the minimum wage law is $7.25, and we're now contemplating, say, raising it to $10.10.
Right.
Right? And right now, there's some guy who's making $9 an hour, let's say. And the reason he's being paid $9 an hour is because his employer thinks he's worth $9 an hour. And probably that's what his productivity is, because if his productivity were less than $9 an hour, let's say $8 an hour, the employer would lose a dollar an hour off of him, so he wouldn't hire him if he was only worth $8. And if he were really worth, say, $9.50, his wage would tend to rise to $9.50 because some other employer would offer $9.01 and someone else would offer $9.02. So in economics, we have this, I don't know, axiom or aphorism or something that says that wages tend to equal marginal revenue product or productivity. So here's a guy who's now making $9 an hour, and his, let's say his productivity is $9 an hour, and now we raise the wage minimum wage to $10.10. And now the employer says to himself, hey, this guy, Joe, who I used to hire at 9, I now have to pay him $10.10. I'm going to lose $1.10 off of him. I'm going to fire him. So that wouldn't be good for that guy because he loses his job, and now he has to twiddle his thumbs.
Right. Well, Professor, but that doesn't necessarily follow, because we haven't, when we have raised the minimum wage, I mean, we have real-world examples of this dynamic where we have raised the minimum wage in states. There are plenty of states in the country where it's actually higher than 7.25, and when it goes up, there's no measurable job loss. We also know that relative to productivity, the minimum wage in this country has not kept up with rises in productivity, yet we have had stagnant wages. So how is that explained by your theory?
Well, it's hardly my theory.
Well, you're espousing.
Right. I wish I could claim originality. This is like a mainstream economic theory.
Not so mainstream, but okay. But nevertheless, the theory you're espousing.
Well, yes. The theory I'm espousing says that when you raise you see, the minimum wage law doesn't compel anyone to hire anyone. The minimum wage law doesn't.
No, I understand that, but I'm sorry.
We did say we weren't going to interrupt.
Right, yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. Well, go ahead. It's your turn. I don't want
to. Well, I'm saying, I'm asking you to, how does, I mean, I get what your theory says, but I'm saying, how does your theory reconcile itself with the real world empirical data that I've just presented to you?
Well, the real-world empirical data is highly problematic because it depends upon the timing. Let me give you an example from a couple of decades ago. At one time, the minimum wage was 40 cents an hour. I think this was in the 1940s or somewhere. And they raised it to 70 cents an hour, which was the highest percentage increase ever, even higher than from 7.25 to 10.10.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, if you walked into an elevator, there'd be a guy standing there. He wasn't a pervert. He was the elevator operator. And you'd say, 12th floor, please, and he would, you know, get you up to the 12th floor. Well, they raised the minimum wage from 40 to 70 cents, and the very next day, did any automatic elevator guy get fired? No, because it takes a little time to introduce automation, which was not competitive at 40 cents an hour, but was very competitive with labor at 70 cents an hour. So if you took your empirical studies of the minimum wage a day or a week or a month or maybe even 6 months after the minimum wage, what you would have found is that the wages rose to from 40 to 70 cents, and virtually none of those people were fired. But after 6 months or 8 months, then they started to get fired, and pretty much after a year or two, however long it took to rearrange matters to introduce the automation, they all lost their jobs. So the empirical stuff, you have to be very careful with that. I would say that of all empirical work on this question, maybe 90-95% of all the empirical work shows that if you wait a long enough time for adjustments to occur, there is very serious deleterious employment effect.
Well, wait now.
The problem is, though, that if you wait too long, then other things happen. So the empirical stuff is very iffy. Anyone can prove anything he wants by just the timing of when he takes the
even in your example, you're talking about, when we're talking about laborers in the context of Walmart, let's say, or in McDonald's, there may not be an automation solution. But even within the context of your example, you're not saying that there's a problem with the minimum wage. You're saying that there may be a certain point where an increase in the minimum wage, in your case, it was the example that you gave, was almost was nearly, I guess, 75%. Maybe there is a point between 40 and 70 cents an hour where it doesn't become effective. I mean, in other words, your example there does not in any way disprove, does not necessarily mean that it's going to create job loss. It just means that at 70 cents an hour for elevator operators, it could have impact down the road. But, I mean, if we're not going to – I mean, here's what's problematic, is that your theory is nice, but my theory is that if you give more money into the hands of those people who are living at the lowest rung of the economic ladder, they're going to spend it. It's going to necessarily create more economic activity, and it's going to necessarily create more jobs, because demand, as much as, Bob or whoever it was in that first example – the bottom line is I hire people when I have more business. And if I got more business coming through, I'm willing to take that that dollar hit on that guy I'm paying $9. If I've got 25% more demand coming in, I can not only pay for that, but I'm actually going to have increased profits.
Hello? You faded out.
I'm sorry.
Sam?
Yeah? Are you there?
It's like dead air now. You're not speaking and... I don't know what's happening.
Oh, I'm. Let me. Can you hear me, Professor?
Now I can hear you, but there was like a 10-second dead silence.
I'm sorry. Where?
Like you were cut off or something.
Well, what I was saying was that that in my example, in my theory, the more money you put in the hands of people who will spend it immediately, which are people who are making the minimum wage or less than the minimum wage, it's going to increase economic activity. It's going to increase demand, and that's going to be the driving force behind whether or not I hire more people.
Right. Well, I tend to disagree with that. I think that what you're conflating or confusing or bringing together, which shouldn't be brought together, is when the minimum wage law rises, that people will actually be paid more. And it's not just a matter of technology, although technology is a way of substituting away. I remember when I was a kid, I would drive into a filling station, and I'd be attacked by about five people. One of them would put the gas in for me, one would check the oil, one would do the windshields, one would check the battery or whatever. And what happened is, because of the minimum wage, we had a lot of self-serves. So it need not be technology, but those jobs are gone. And now what you have is what your theory says is that if the minimum wage rises to a moderate level, maybe not 40 to 70 cents, but maybe 40 to 50 cents or something like that, and maybe not $7.25 to $20 an hour, but $7.25 to $10 an hour, what you're saying is, well, then the people will get more money. But I'm saying the minimum wage law doesn't require that anyone get a job at a higher wage. It just says that if they get a job, then they have to be paid that, but they don't have to get that job.
No, I understand.
Now, take this guy who's now, his productivity is $9 an hour. His productivity isn't going to change if the minimum wage law goes to $10.10 and nothing else happens. He's going to be fired. How soon he'll be fired is an empirical issue. He might not be fired the next day, but he's going to be fired because his productivity didn't rise. And to pay him $10.10 when he's only worth $9, you lose $1.10.
Well,
and if you do,
to use this example.
Didn't we say we weren't putting into
that? I know, but you've made the point.
Am I going on too long?
I think we all understand the example of the elevator operator. But my point is that we're simply arguing theories here. You won't accept empiricism because you says we really can't measure this in the real world, is what you're suggesting.
No. I do accept empiricism. These are good illustrations. And my understanding of the economic literature on this is that about 95% of all empirical work show that there are very serious deleterious effects on unemployment. But much more important are the empirical studies are the logic of it. And you're not just, I don't think I'm getting across the logic of it.
No, I understand the logic of it, but I'm suggesting to you.
I don't think you understand the logic of it. You see, the logic of it that you're operating on is that the minimum wage looks like a floor. And as you raise it, the wages rise. Whereas the true account of the minimum wage is not at all a floor. Rather, it's a hurdle over which you have to jump in order to get a job in the first place. And if there's a minimum wage of $7.25, well, then you have to have productivity of higher than $7.25 to get a job. Look,
your argument is that it taken to its logical conclusion that if you were that hurdle was raised too high, you would have less jobs. And I'm saying it's possible that in one sector you may have less jobs, but in another sector you may have more. In fact, even in your example of the elevator operator, I mean, what is the value of an elevator operator to the people who come into the building? If it raises the rents of those people in that building, then the owner of that building will pay for that elevator operator.
Well, he wouldn't have paid for the elevator operator at the old minimum wage of 40, but he will pay for the he wouldn't pay for the automatic elevator when the minimum wage was 40, because then the unskilled labor and the unsophisticated equipment was very competitive with the more sophisticated automatic elevator. But when you price people out of the market, which is what you're doing with the unskilled labor, you price them out of the market, and at 70 cents, they all lost their jobs.
Yes, I know. I mean, we, again, that's not an argument against the minimum wage. It's against the raising the minimum wage by 75% for elevator operators. But,
well, look, suppose they raise it just from 40 to 45 or something like that, or suppose we raise the minimum wage from 7.25 to 8, which is a moderate increase.
Mm-hmm.
What about all the people who have a productivity in between 7.25 and 8? Suppose I have a productivity of 7.50, and I'm happily employed right now, and now all of a sudden they raise it to 8, and I lose my job. And what about the people right now at 7.25?
But there's nothing in the real world without. I'm sorry,
Sam,
I don't mean to interrupt.
Sam, you are interrupting. Let me just finish the sentence.
Go ahead.
What about the people whose productivity right now is $6 an hour, and we have a minimum wage law of 7? Do you know what the unemployment rate of black teenagers is in the inner cities?
Yeah, well, in the inner cities, it's in the 20s, in the 30s.
In the 40s. which is in the stratosphere. This is horrible. This is a very, very bad situation, and the unemployment rate, the real unemployment rate, is even higher than that, because the unemployment statistics only count you if you're actively seeking a job. But if you've been actively seeking a job and your productivity is $5 or $6 an hour and you haven't been able to find one for a year or two, through the magic of accounting, they don't count you as unemployed. So the real unemployment is just horrendous. And, you know, these young black kids, when they're in effect told by perhaps well-meaning people such as yourself, although not everybody who favors the minimum wage law is well-meaning, when they're told, in effect, that they can't get a job and they have to twiddle their thumbs and they get bored and they get into trouble and they go to jail, this is just a horrible situation. And well-meaning people such as yourself, I think you're well-meaning, I have no reason to think you're not, are just fooled by this. The logic is...
What is the value of making $5 an hour if you're living in New York City?
It's better than zero.
Well, but what is the value of it? If you can't feed your family... Wait a second. Don't interrupt me here.
I've interrupted you. I apologize.
I understand. It's all right. I'm used to it. The point is, if we cannot provide a living wage for people, if the market cannot provide a living wage for people, then what is the value of it? I mean, if they cannot go out and rent an apartment, if you cannot go out and feed your children, if you cannot get health care, what is the value of that $3 an hour job? $2 an hour job? Because I imagine you don't agree with the idea that the state should be providing any assistance. What is the value of that? I mean, where does that leave society if we have masses amount of people? You mentioned New York. I mean, we know that in the 1920s, we had literally 20,000 people living on the Bowery, literally on the Bowery. I mean, what is the value of that then? How is that a more ethical society that we live in?
Sam, let me ask you a question, and just answer my question, because I didn't want to take it elsewhere. Which number is higher, 4 or 2?
I'm sorry?
Which number is higher, 4 or 2?
4.
Which number is higher, 6 or 0?
Well, 6.
Ah, okay, great. My point is that if a person has a productivity level of $6 an hour, and there were no minimum wage, he could be paid $6 an hour. When the minimum wage is $7.25, he's paid zero. Now, it's true that $6 an hour is nothing to write home about, but you just...
It's not just to not write home about.
Professor,
you're not answering my question.
Sam, you're interrupting me.
I understand, but you're not answering my question.
I'm not going to answer your question. I'm going to keep going.
All right, go ahead.
And when I stop, you can ask the question again.
And you won't answer it again.
Well, I might.
Okay.
But I won't if you keep interrupting me. And didn't you promise not to interrupt?
Well, I said I'd do my best.
Okay, well, try to do a little harder best. Try to do your best harder or whatever the word is.
Okay.
Look, not only is $6 better than zero, which you've admitted, but when you're making $6 an hour, you're getting OJT, which is in economic jargon called on-the-job training. When you're working at $6 an hour, you're learning skills. And when you learn skills, then you get a higher productivity and you get a higher wage. When you said, what use is the market when it can't give a living wage, the market doesn't give wages. What gives wages is productivity. And if you stop people from working who are perfectly capable of working at $6 an hour, and you won't let them because you insist on a minimum wage law of $7.25, which prices them out of the market, then you deprive them of on-the-job training, you deprive them of increase in productivity. You keep talking, well, you can't live too well on six. Well, you can't live too well on zero. Six is better than zero no matter how you slice it. And let's forget about welfare. We can talk about welfare another day. Let's suppose that welfare is whatever it is. $6 an hour is still better than $6 an hour plus welfare is better than zero plus welfare, plus you're learning on the job, which is very important.
Now, for this elevator operator, where does his job training lead him? I mean, because when he goes home with his $6 an hour as opposed to $0 an hour, and he cannot live in New York City, He cannot live it an hour and a half outside of New York City. He can't afford the transportation in. He can't pay for his kids' food. He can't pay for their health care. How is that helpful and ethical for society? Please answer the question.
Well, it's a lot more ethical than zero.
Why? If he can't live in an apartment and he can't feed his kids, what difference does it make that he can give them two meals a week as opposed to seven meals, as opposed to no meals a week?
So you're taking back your concession to me that six is greater than zero?
No. Six as a number is greater than zero, but not in the context of what it costs to live. I mean, yes, having cancer in one part of your body is better than having your entire body racked with cancer. But at the end of the day, it's still problematic. And so there is a threshold in this country where it takes for you to pay for rent. We know this is all empirical stuff. We know exactly how much money it takes if you want to live in New York for the vast majority of people. We know exactly how much it takes to put food on the table. Yes, six is more than zero. Is it necessarily better, actually? I mean, when we're talking about dollars and we're talking about cost, not necessarily, no. All right, but let's move on. We're not going to get anywhere with this. Let's move on.
No. I don't want to move on. I want to continue right here.
Okay.
You've admitted that the number six is greater than the number zero.
The number six is greater, yes.
Hey, you're interrupting again. I let you go on for about two or three minutes.
All right, Professor, I'll let you have your final say on this, and then we're going to move on.
Okay. You've admitted that the number six is greater than the number zero.
Yes.
But you don't seem to be open to admitting that $6 is better than $0,
which I find
highly problematic. Now, look, there's this kid. This is black kid in Harlem. And he's got welfare. He's got whatever it is. We're holding that constant, ceteris paribus. You know, the horses have blinders on them when they go in the street. Well, we're going to try to put the blinders on and hold everything else constant. And right now this kid is living. He's living in Harlem. He's in New York City. How? I don't know. He's in the projects, whatever it is. But you know how much he's making from honest work? $0. And I say if we get rid of the minimum wage law, he will get $6, which is better than $0. And you keep going on about, well, it's very expensive in New York City. Yak, yak, yak. That's true. But no matter how expensive it is, he's living there now, and his situation would be better with $6 an hour extra than the zero you are consigning him to.
And $9 an hour would be better than six.
The reason he's not making six is because the minimum wage law is $7.25. And if it was nine, I'm going to keep saying if it was nine until you let me finish. You know, I'm not really enjoying it because you did promise not to interrupt, and I tried not to interrupt you, and I only interrupted you once, and I apologize, and you must have interrupted me 15 times, so please let me finish a sentence.
Okay.
If the minimum wage was $9 an hour, then not only would this kid who is now making, who is now productivity at 6 and unable to get a job, but even people whose productivity is 8 and are making 8, they too would lose out the job, and they would make $0 instead of $8, and $8 is better than $0.
Okay. Well, the evidence of that assertion doesn't exist in the real world, but I know that you don't believe that that we can actually empirically measure that, or at least you've said that it's very suspect when we do. But so let's move on to, and this is not unrelated in many respects, but it was recently in the news, but I want to move on to something that you've written on, I think it was lewrockwell.com. And it was in the context of something else, but I think it's a really interesting point. You wrote that free association is a very important aspect of liberty. It's crucial. Indeed, its lack was a major problem with slavery. That the slaves could not quit. They were forced to associate with their masters when they would have had vastly preferred not to do so. Otherwise, slavery wasn't so bad. You could pick cotton, sing songs, be fed nice gruel, etc. The only real problem was that this relationship was compulsory. It violated the law of free association and that of the slaves' private property rights in their own persons. The Civil Rights Act of 1964, then, to a much smaller degree, of course, made partial slaves out of the establishments of the owners of establishments like Woolworths. Now, so you perceive in this instance that, you know, and I understand that you follow the guiding light, and tell me if I'm wrong on this. I give you permission to interrupt me if it's wrong, of the non-aggression principle. That is that everything is okay but for that which involves the threat of physical violence upon someone. And thus, the Civil Rights Act, which says you as a store owner must serve all comers you cannot deny people based upon race, is encroaching upon their freedom in such a way that they've been made into partial slaves, because the defining aspect of slavery in this instance is the force to associate with people. Is that a fair assessment of what you've written?
Not only fair, but highly accurate. But before I answer that, and you've gone on about 5 minutes here, so give me.
Well, it's my show, to be fair.
Yeah, well, but, we're supposed to share. Let me just say that your summary of my views on empirical evidence is wrong. In my understanding, about 95% of all empirical evidence on the minimum wage shows that it creates unemployment for unskilled workers. Okay, now let's get back to this new thing. The new topic about slavery and the Civil Rights Act and free association. Let me read you something from Frederick Douglass, who, this is in 1882, he's a former slave. He's roughly the 19th century equivalent of, I don't know, Martin Luther King or Malcolm X, namely a leader of the black community, a scholar, a person with great effect on the black community. Here's a quote from Frederick Douglass. My feelings were not the result of any marked cruelty in the treatment I received. They sprang from the consideration of my being a slave at all. It was slavery, not its mere incidents, that I hated. I had been cheated. I saw through the attempt to keep me in ignorance. I saw that slaveholders would gladly made me believe that they were merely acting under the authority of God in making a slave of me and making slaves of others, and I felt to them as robbers and deceivers. The feeding and clothing me well could not atone for taking my liberty from me. End quote. That's Frederick Douglass. What he's saying is that the essence of the evil, he's asking, why is slavery evil? And he was answering it roughly the way I answered it. Namely, it had nothing to do with picking cotton. It had nothing to do with eating gruel. It had nothing to do with, I don't know, living in a cabin, or nothing to do with singing songs or any of it. The key element of slavery was that it violated the law of free association or the axiom of non-aggression. That was what was wrong with slavery. That was what I was telling the New York Times. And those people somehow got from that I thought that slavery was not so bad, which is a perversion of.
I'm not going to defend the way that the New York Times expressed your views. It's not relevant.
Sam, did I go on too long that time? Is that why you're interrupting me?
Oh, I apologize. Continue.
Right. Okay. So. The key element of the evil of slavery was none of these mere incidents, as Frederick Douglass talks about. Rather, it was coercion. It was forcing people against their will to associate with you when they didn't want to. Now, let's take Woolworths and a black person, Woolworths in 1940, whatever, Woolworths in the South. A black person comes in and says, hey, what's for lunch, or I'd like a hamburger. And the guy says, sorry, we don't serve black people. And what I'm saying is that if you compel Woolworths to associate with the black person in this way, what you're doing is you're violating the rights of Woolworths. Now, this really sounds horrible to our modern ear. You know, isn't that evil? And again, I approach this from an economic point of view and from an ethical point of view. From an ethical point of view, it's very clear. People should be free to associate with whoever they want. The analogy I use is that if you deny this, what you're really doing is promoting compulsory bisexuality. Now, sit down. Don't interrupt. Let me make this point. The problem with male heterosexuals is that they discriminate against half the human race in terms of love partners or bed partners or whatever. Problem with female heterosexuals is that they do discriminate. They don't go to bed with other females. That's politically correct to attack heterosexuals. I'm now going to do something politically incorrect, and I'm going to attack homosexuals. Male homosexuals are evil discriminators because they, too, discriminate against half the human race, namely women. And lesbians also are evil discriminators because they discriminate against half the human race, namely men. It's only bisexuals who don't discriminate against anyone. So if you're going to logically say that nobody should ever discriminate against anyone, what you're really calling for is compulsory bisexuality. But even bisexuals, bless their hearts, as we say in the South, are evil discriminators because they too discriminate, not on the basis of gender, but on the basis of, I don't know, lookism or sense of humor or, I don't know, intelligence or whatever normal people discriminate in favor of. So Woolworths should be able to discriminate, too. Everyone should be able to discriminate. Everyone does discriminate. I mean, as I say, heteros and homos all discriminate, so nothing wrong with discriminating. Now,
Professor, wait a second. Now you have actually gone on.
Your turn.
But let me address this.
Your turn.
Don't you see there is a difference between an individual's sexual preference and a business that is engaging in economic activity and is using all of the resources that society has provided as well as a license to do business? That Woolworths was a corporation by not in nature. Woolworths was a corporation because they registered with the state. And so when you say to a black person, you can't go in and eat at Woolworths, or let's use another example. When you say to a black person, you can't come in and buy my goods that you're looking to resell, you're actually preventing them from participating in the economy. And you are fundamentally hurting their ability to live, and even in your laissez-faire capital world, to participate there. Now, so why is that not problematic to you? I mean, I understand this notion that it's a slightly different than just associating with one. It is actually about allowing someone to participate or not participate in the economy based on their skin.
First of all, I didn't say it wasn't problematic. I do regard this as highly problematic. I wouldn't do that. I think it's pretty despicable.
No. I know you wouldn't do it.
Hey, shut up. It's my turn now, isn't it?
Well, you just mischaracterized what I said.
Is it my turn or not?
Well, you mischaracterized me, so I just wanted to do...
And when it's your turn, you can correct me. But it's my turn now. You said that I thought it was not problematic.
No.
That's what you said.
I think it
is problematic.
Why?
And I don't favor this. I'm making a distinction between should these people be put in jail or not. Now, like, take this guy. What's his name? The Clippers guy.
Sterling.
Sterling, right. The question is, should he be put in jail? And I don't think he should be put in jail. Now, Hey, Sam, can't you control yourself a little bit?
Well, no, because no one's saying he should be put in jail.
Yes, the Woolworths would be put in jail if they violated the law.
This is different. This is a completely different situation. Totally different situation. I'm sorry.
Sam, I'm not really
stick to the
this.
Point. You keep avoiding
Sam, I'm
what
not really
I'm discussing.
Enjoying this conversation.
I'm finding it tiresome,
this.
Too, because you will not address what I have said. It's okay, we can take turns here, but if you don't address what I say, then this is going nowhere, and I have to do a show here, too, because this is not, we're just sitting at a bar. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I've asked you to address, how is it that you think that you're comparing heterosexuality and bisexuality and homosexuality, lifestyle choices, or I should say, sexual preference, with a business refusing service to people based on their race? Now please address that. How is that the same? Do you not recognize that someone engaging in commerce has a different liability? I mean, this is English common law, isn't it? That you have to serve all comers. This has been around for centuries.
I'll try to address it, but as soon as I start in, you interrupt, so it's really hard to get a word in edgewise with you. You know, do you play chess by any chance?
Occasionally.
Do you play with a clock?
No.
Ah. The way you play with a clock is when it's my turn to think, I hit your clock, or rather when it's your turn, I hit my button, and your clock goes.
When we play chess, I promise to play that way, but let's go back to the point.
No, but the point I'm making now is if we were to, count how many seconds or how many minutes you've had and how many minutes I had, I don't know, I think you'd have more, but I'm not sure.
When I come on your show, you can reverse it.
Okay, fair enough. I'll let you keep interrupting me. I won't object. I'll let you keep talking, and I'll just take 10% of the time. I'll take whatever you can give me, Sam. Okay, let me now address the question that you make, namely, shouldn't we make a distinction between commerce and personal interactions? Is that fair to
yeah,
characterize
yes,
your
Yes, specifically
question?
In the Woolworths case and the, yes.
Right. Okay, I say no. I say when it comes to putting people in jail, when it comes to rights, rights are no respecters of commerce versus personality. Look, if you rape someone in the business world, you're a rapist, and if you rape someone at home and in a personal setting, it's equally evil. If you murder someone in a business context, you're a murderer, and you're equally a murderer if you murder someone in your house. So from a point of view of ethics, I see no distinction between commerce and personal rights, and if you're going to put people in jail for discriminating in the business world, well, then you should, if you're going to be logically consistent, put them in jail for discriminating in the personal life. And if you're not going to put them in jail for or use legal sanctions against them personally, like in the heterosexual, homosexual case, well, then you shouldn't do it either in the business world.
Well, my argument, my response to
the question?
No, because my response would be, why is it necessary to file papers when you start a business in this country as opposed to when you make a sexual preference or when you have a sexual preference? I mean, we don't have to register. We're not engaged in commerce as when we are heterosexual. We are not using public resources in any way when we're engaged. I mean, there's fundamentally a difference between who I choose to sleep with, unless I was a brothel, in which case then I am engaging in commerce. But the idea that there's no difference between commerce and choosing who I associate with in my personal life is, I'm afraid I just don't even know how to respond to that. And there's no difference between anything.
Well, I think there are differences between lots of things, but I don't think there's any legal difference here. First of all, I don't think you should have to file any papers in the laissez-faire society. You wouldn't have to file papers to open up a business. And let's forget about the fact that Woolworths was a corporation. Let's suppose it was just a mom-and-pop shop, not a corporation, because that gets us off the point. The point is, ethics is ethics. And if something is heinous and wrong in one context, then it's heinous and wrong in another context. And just because I'm conflating these two, namely saying that there's not a dime's worth of difference between them, namely between the personal and the commercial, doesn't mean that I don't draw other distinctions. I draw plenty of distinctions, but I don't draw this distinction with regard to the law. Now, I think it's equally despicable, or very despicable, what the Clippers guy did, and I think it's despicable what the Woolworths did, but that's not the question I'm addressing. I'm addressing the question of, should they be put in jail? And here's where you're missing my point. We all agree the Clippers guy should not be put in jail for his thought crime or for his sentiments, but according to the Civil Rights Act of 1964, anyone doing that, look, if I put up a sign on my store saying no Jews or dogs or blacks or gays allowed in my store, I'll go to jail.
Yes.
And that is a violation of the law of freedom of association, and freedom of association is what distinguishes slavery from non-slavery, so this is an improper law.
Wait a second. What is the law of freedom of association? I mean, when we're talking about, I guess if you don't see a difference between commerce and in your your parallel universe, Woolworths did not have to file papers, or mom and pop does not have to file papers with the local Board of Health to have their restaurant. I mean, unfortunately, I mean, that's the case. Now, I suppose if we were to live in Walter Blockistan, where you don't have to file those papers and whatnot, there wouldn't be a distinction between commercial activity and personal relations, but we do. And I don't know anywhere, whether it's Singapore or Hong Kong, where you don't have to do those things. And so where is this place that exists? Does it exist anywhere in the world?
Sam, let me get off the point a little. I won't answer your question for a second, but I will. If you ever want me on your show again, you're going to have to treat me more fairly. Otherwise, I won't come on your show. And I enjoy you. I enjoy talking to you. So I would advise you, if you want me to be on your show again, to, you know, let me speak and not interrupt me. Okay, now back to your question. I love that Walter Blockistan. That was really a fine point on your part. I think you're switching the subject. If you want to talk about the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, and you want to talk about the need to control business because of food and drugs or whatever, that's a whole topic, and we should probably talk about that some other time if you ever invite me on your show and if ever I agree to be on your show again. But let's suppose that it's a mom-and-pop store and you don't have to file any papers. And, you know, in Cuba, what's going on in Cuba right now is that people now, for the first time, are able to invite guests to their home and feed them dinner and charge them for it. I'm not sure if you're aware, but that's the fact. They're opening up commerce a little bit. Okay, so here's some guy. Previously, it was just, Jose's house, or Jose and Maria's house, and now Jose and Maria open up their house and they say, hey, come on in, we'll serve you dinner and we'll charge you for it. And they have a little sign that no Jews allowed, let's say. Now, in my Blockistan, I would say they should not go to jail for that. It's not nice. I'm Jewish. You're Jewish. We don't like that. We don't like it not only for Jews, but for anybody. But do they have that right? And if they don't have that right, they should be put in jail for it. And I say that there's no real difference, not a dime's worth of difference, to get back to the Alabama governor on that, between who they go to bed with and who they have in their house.
I think there are probably a lot of factors in Cuba and a lot of other ways that you can go to jail as well that we would disagree with. So I'm not sure what the point is. But in this country, it's not just the FDA. The fact of the matter is that if you're engaging in commerce, you have to do so in a way that does not deprive people of an ability to engage in commerce based upon their race. I mean, I understand on the basis on which you find that problematic, because you don't think that there's a difference between commerce and personal sexual orientation. I think to a certain extent, you know, this country has rejected that. I don't know any country that has accepted it. I don't know, frankly, in Cuba, if you could publicly say that you can discriminate based upon that. I don't know. I'm not sure that you know.
No, I don't know.
So maybe it is the case even in Cuba. You can't do that without going to jail. I mean, so I'm not sure what the value of that example is. But, one of the things that I've found frustrating over the years about libertarians is that they have decided on a set of principles that they want our society to work on. They would be largely rejected by people, and I don't know, you know, how it's more ethical to deny people, at the very least, commerce, the ability to engage fully in the economy. I just don't see how that's the case. But, you know, I guess that's a different set of ethics. And I don't know how that's even sort of like beneficial to the economy in any way.
Well, seems to me that justice is justice is justice, and justice is blind, and justice should work in every nook and cranny of our society, and it shouldn't make any invidious distinctions between the personal and the commercial. And if something is right in the commercial, it should be right in the personal, and if something is right in the personal, it should be right in the commercial, and vice versa. If it's wrong in the commercial, it should be wrong in personal, and again, vice versa. I don't see how you make such a gigantic difference, and you're willing to put people in jail for something in the commercial realm, but not in the personal realm.
Do you think that we should abolish the notion? I mean, if someone's in a corporation in this country, if someone works at a corporation, and they're engaged in something like, I don't know, let's just use the case of GM, knowingly not recalling these cars, which led to the deaths of some people. Do you believe the executives of GM should be put in jail for what would otherwise be a crime of at least maybe manslaughter, negligence, knowingly allowing people to buy their vehicles that would put them in jail?
Well, there are two questions. One, if they knew of a smoking bomb? No, a ticking bomb.
Yes. Let's presume they did know, because I think that's what the evidence shows. But go ahead.
Right. Well, ticking bombs, if you know of a ticking bomb and it's in your product, yes, they should be penalized very severely.
They should go to jail as individuals.
Well, of course. The corporation can't go to jail. The corporation is sort of a legal construct. There would have to be certain individuals. If they knew of a ticking bomb, they should be dealt with severely, individually. I'm not sure which individuals, the president or whoever. But this leads to a much broader question, and that is the economics of it. And that is, you can always make the car a little safer by another $10 per part. And if you keep doing it, you get a Mercedes, which means that it's very, very safe. But nobody can afford it, and then they go on a bicycle, and then they get killed on a bicycle more quickly than on a car. So the question is, what is the optimal safety versus money trade-off? And here I think the free enterprise system is not only is the best and perhaps only way to do it. If you do it by the government, you're going to get much worse situations. I mean, if the government nationalized cars, we would have the Lada or something that they did in the Soviet Union, which just sort of fell apart. So there are really two issues. One, if you know of a ticking bomb and you don't tell anyone about it, then that's very legally problematic. But the other is, what combination of safety and money should there be? And here I think only the market can determine that.
Right. I mean, I guess maybe we've taken this as far as we can go today. Is there anything you want to you want to finish with? And also, I encourage you to actually to calculate how many minutes you got versus how many minutes I got. I think you'll find you got better than 10%.
Oh, I'm sure I got better than 10%. I was just using that as a hypothetical. No, I think overall, this is our first shot at it, and I enjoyed talking to you. I enjoyed debating people, and I think you're a very bright person, and I'd like to continue. And if we do, I'm sure we'll do better next time.
We'll try. We'll try.
Okay.
Professor Walter Block from the Joseph A. Butt College of Business at Loyola University, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me on your show. Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, folks.
Never a more appropriate sound effect to end a phone call. Oh, my God.
Well,
I believe all I will say very briefly is I believe I
did
tell you.
At least, he's consistent. I mean, I don't know how. I really have to say that I'm not quite sure how one argues with one who believes that operating a store is the same thing as sexual preference or sexual
saying
orientation.
Saying no to me, honey, it's like saying no to MLK. Come on. No, I mean, that's just totally demented. But I was saying, though, is that I believe I told you, don't assume that just because this guy's a professor that this will be any different than any random libertarian caller. And I think... Not only was I proven right, I actually think most libertarian callers actually are a little bit less touchy on the interruption thing.
Yes, he was extremely touchy. I mean, I mean, I made this clear at the beginning of the interview and also in our emails. I said, you know, I'm going to do my best.
Hey, hey, hey! Hey!
But
okay,
do my best,
so we had
but it is a radio show, and so we got to keep it, moving. It's more like tennis than it is sort of like...
Okay, so tennis. You would like to pursue a game of tennis. Now, let's draw that analogy. You would say that
literally,
you should play tennis with a Mexican person.
I am looking right now. Let me tell you something. I almost want to ask you guys to come over here. I am looking at almost 100, maybe more, IMs that are here to talk more about this. So let's take a break. I'm going to shoot some cortisone into my spine because I have quite a bit.
Before we take a break, though, I want to – can one listener please, when we put this up, go back and time how much Sam talked and how much this guy talked.
I like to think that I would have.
I think it's more than even. I think he might have spoken a little bit more.
I don't
actually.
Think so.
But
I will say this in my defense that the biggest chunk of time that I took speaking was quoting him. Was literally quoting him.
Okay, so you were quoting me. Okay, so then
let's take a break. Let's take a break. I want you to be respectful, Michael. I'm going to dock your pay down to 3 1/4.
Hey!
For
well, that's better than nothing.
Oh my God! I think I just put myself into traction. Oh God! All right,
oh,
folks.
Oh, my God.
You can become a member. Ah, forget it. Let's just go. The number is 646-257-3920. I can't promise you we're going to get the calls because we...
I think we've had enough with talking to people today.
Literally, I felt my spine, like, crack when you said that. All right, folks. We'll be back in just a moment.
Sticks and stones may break his bones, but conservative lies will only make him stronger. Sam Cedar.
Oh, God. Oh, folks. We're back. Sam Cedar. Majority Report. I really do have my back is just in bad shape today, and I think I threw it out when. Let's go. Let's start to work through some of these IMs. We got a couple of calls too. We'll take your calls. Make Sam read dumb names. Love the interview, but for reals, the dumb business names is getting old. I am Boxer the Horse. A throwback for Thursday when you talked to DiGeronimo. Matt and the BK, what the fuck is it with libertarians and phones? Seriously, but productivity is way up over time. Real wages are declining because shareholders and executives are taking it all. He can be king in his own classroom. I'm sure he never interrupts his students. Woolworths would not go to jail. They'd be fined and penalized, and no one has said Sterling should be jailed. Libertarians love red herrings. I want to know exactly when someone has gone to jail for discrimination. My Dixie. Wrecked. Of course there's a connection problem. He's a libertarian. There have also been studies that show if minimum wage had kept up with productivity, would be over $20 an hour. Shouldn't interrupt Sam. His fifis are getting hurt. This guy's a professor. I'm going to encourage Loyola to dump this bozo. Slappy Shack. Oh, my God. All this time, it wasn't the libertarian phones. It was Cedar conspiracy against the libertarians. Militant apathy. Oh, my God. It's the bad connection shit already. Classic libertarian call. We should actually take the phone call stuff and just put it on at the end into the best of. I mean, we'll cut the phone thing, but then attack it at the end of for members only, just so they can hear. Milton Apathy, we used heat with whale oil, so we needed whalers. Technology improved, we don't need them anymore. What's the proof that their wage had anything to do with the demand for their labor? But he just said it's unskilled labor. Why the black kid? Labor follows demand. Does this motherfucker actually have a degree? Frederick Douglass's problem was his lack of freedom of association. No, I think it was the rape, torture, mutilation, castration, theft, and kidnapping. I can't believe this dude. Whiz a fan.
The gruel was pretty good.
What is it with libertarians and their phones? Hey, shut up, Sam. I'm tired of you talking about the 2% cut in Social Security. Hopefeld, professor uses the fancy word deontological. It merely means not a utilitarian of ensuring results as opposed to ensuring equal before the fact chance. Right off the bat, the guy cannot stop the claptrap philosophy jargon. I took a course also, but can refrain from talking like Amartya Sen versus Bernard Williams debate book. This $9 an hour employee model only works when the labor market is perfectly competitive. When professor makes the VMRP, or value of marginal revenue product argument, he's assuming that market for workers has not monopsony power. Look at this mainstream textbook under the diagram for monopsonist demand. Perfect competition, for which the professor relies on, assumes that each employer is so small that he cannot lower his wage one penny without losing all his workforce. The reason Henry Ford raised wages were many, including other firms were paying close to the workers' reservation wage. They were paying one penny above the rate at which workers would quit. However, these workers were probably adding more than three or four times their wages. How else could Ford triple their wage rates and still make profits? The second reason is that once a worker gets a Ford job, he won't quit because, unlike the auto plant owned by the professor, Ford wasn't exploiting paying one penny over the lowest acceptable wage. This professor knows nothing about minimum wage because he should know about reservation wage, what a normal people call a living wage, a wage at which a worker cannot maintain himself. Cool J 146, the professor has a nice theoretical story, but I have to ask why, if he can afford car ownership, insurance, and gas, would he not be able to pay a minimum wage for someone to wash his car? He didn't address the historical increases in productivity, how the minimum wage, he didn't address any of it. There's not a price to safety correlation. As far as I know, the list of safest cars each year is around half entry-level cars, or at least far from highbrow and BMW. It's amazing how much of his evidence was anecdotal and speculative. Fred at Conn College, cheers from Seoul. I first heard of Professor Block a few months ago when a friend of mine at Loyola posted an article defending Block after he made comments that was not so bad. Another friend of mine at Loyola, who's black and female, was unamused by him referring to women and black people as less productive. He might be more intellectual than the libertarian college asking if you own a Denny's, but his contrarian ways seem problematic. Friend just IM'd me. Apparently, he kicks students out of class if they argue with him too much. Park Jr., already the thing is lost, assuming that most markets are coercion-free is ludicrous. Healthcare, food, necessities, consumers have almost no power to barter in modern capitalism. Have him explain 300 million people can haggle over the price of food and scarcity. What an effing douchebag. For someone so smarmy and condescending, is little nothing to say. You'd think people who base their political ideology in economics would have a basic understanding. But on the bright side, at least I know that my six-year-old son has the intellect to qualify for a professor at economics. Hang up on him. Ilmik, your guest sounds like the first libertarian you've had on who's not spiteful. With that said, the way he looks at the hourly rate seems like he's never smoking with a working class person. Okay, now I'm angry. Why should young black people make way below the minimum wage on top of being discriminated in the job market? Oh, we're worth less. I was wrong. He's spiteful on the low. Wow, just wow. Amy B., if the elevator operator can afford to buy more and send his kid to college, that's a good thing. Also, does this guy realize that the kid in the inner city isn't working because he has an adult has that job because he can't find anything else? It's a job shortage. Karos, nice restraint, Sam. Could totally hear you sucking in your breath like you wanted to scream at the guy. Isn't the fact that a minimum wage eliminated the elevator operators still kind of a good thing? It was a pointless job that could be automated after all. Rusticus, the whole libertarian phone problem is reaching a conspiratorial level. Why must a black kid in Harlem in the projects? Why must the example be laced with racial bias? Does the professor abhor governments reducing the freedom of workers to freely decide to collectively organize and negotiate with management? Is he really quoting Frederick Douglass? This guy is surreal. He makes the bar for academics look quite low. Casey Humanist, debating a libertarian is about whether it's okay to exploit labor is like debating a serious alcoholic about whether his drinking is bad. I couldn't listen live. I'll listen to it later. Buggy.
Conservatives seem to have a thing for Frederick Douglass, don't they?
Yeah, I guess so. This guy views productivity as inherent to the laborer. I think we might agree that it has a lot to do with how a boss puts labor to use. Someone is not worth $9 an hour. He's valued in that work to which his skills have enabled him to convince a boss to hire him. There's a misstep with libertarians when they look at tech productivity and see pressure on wages. Plus, his ideas about OJT are frankly stupid. Though speed I am reading is amazing. B, again, these libertarians have zero solutions for battering society. It's all just that someone can't get paid what they're worth and F them. Grandma's got cancer. Tough shit. Hope she's insured. Black lung, too fucking bad. Should have gotten a better job. Bean, the minimum wage is too high as it is. Every time I go to McDonald's, I'm attacked by people trying to cook my nuggets, fries, and shove a chocolate shake down my throat. What color are the eyes of the black kid in Harlem who's on welfare? I need to know. This rotten three-year-old is compelling me to feed her right now, even though I'd rather listen to Sam not interrupt. Be right back. Zen Stick. Sam, well-meaning and good-looking. Does Professor realize he's talking to Sam Cedar, not Myla Cedar? Will the parliamentarian please tally the interruptions? Epic. Libertarian says you're supposed to share your show. Please clip that soundbite. Please don't interrupt. This is insanity. Amazeballs. Sugar High 77. The elephant in Professor's block argument is profit. This guy is insufferable. Nick Washington. Why can't the right-wingers filibuster? They can't have a conversation. Maggie Thatcher was the prototypical obstinate debater. Macintologist. I came in late. Who is this fool? Never mind. Cadet in Panama. Oh, my God. The professor full of it. His arguments are specious, and his examples suck. I feel sorry for the students he used to have. If they actually believed him. He has no more authority than my right-wing crazy uncle on this topic. Powerbell. As a Catholic and graduate of a Jesuit university, I'm appalled that Dr. Block continues to be employed at Loyola. After all, Pope Leo the 13th said that employers have a responsibility to pay a living wage. Further, it should be known that Block's colleagues have asked that he be censured for his outrageous views on slavery and civil rights, which are contrary to the values of Loyola. I would argue that Block's opinions indicate a total disrespect for the human person and indirect contradiction to the teachings of the Catholic Church. I will email you the article regarding the above opposition. Let's go to the phones. You're calling from an 817 area code. Who's this?
Yes, Daniel from Texas.
Hi, Daniel. How are you?
Doing good. How about yourself?
Not bad. What's going on?
Yeah, so you know, I really think you should take all of the libertarian calls you've had and just make a YouTube compilation of all of the connection problems they've had. I thought that would be a pretty good idea.
We could put this under the put that underneath the, like, I can't hear you.
You got to be off freedom. Exactly. You're cracking up.
10-minute video too, because there's so many of them. It's yeah. So I wanted to call in about you know, I actually tuned in probably the last few minutes, so it seems like I may have missed a lot of his economic discussion points, but I did catch the stuff about like bisexuals or something like that, and I was kind of half listening while working. But it seems like to me, and this also probably could be connected. This probably would address economic arguments as well. It seems to me that really, when it comes to all these libertarians, this guy included, I don't know how he got a doctorate in economics, but they seem to have a problem with math. They make the assumption that the individual doing business with, like a consumer doing business with a company, is at the same level of power. But that's never really the case. Even if you're a capitalist who is running a company with just five employees out of his own home, you still have more power than the individual consumer you're doing business with. And that's why we made laws to protect consumers, because of that power imbalance. That goes the same with employees. We made laws, including labor laws, to protect employees from the abuses of the hierarchy or from the piece that they are working in, essentially.
Yeah, he would say, but as long as people have free will and liberty, that will feed their kids.
Right.
I got to jump, Daniel. I got a lot of calls, but I appreciate the comment.
Sounds good.
All right, bye-bye.
Sure.
Let's go to Colin from a 718 area code. Who's this?
Hi, this is Andy from Brooklyn.
Hey, Andy.
How's it going, Sam?
Going pretty good. How you doing?
Hey, sorry, I've never called in before. I'm not a libertarian. Like, I'm actually more like, I really like David Harvey. I'm more commie kind of guy. But I just wanted to say, like, the one thing that I felt like wasn't really coming through in your conversation with Walter Block was that you were kind of arguing, or the tacit part of your argument was that the government should figure out, you know, in the minimum wage case, like, what the minimum wage should be, whereas what Walter Block wasn't saying is that the libertarians, what they believe is that the market will figure out what the minimum wage should be. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So, and like, personally, I'm not 100% sure that the government would do a better job of figuring out what the minimum wage should be than the market, and that if you, and that the government getting in itself involved in the market does create distortions in the market, because the government has its own interests, and its own interests really aren't the well-being of the people, as we can see.
Well, all right, no, hold on. Let me just stop you there. All right, the question is whether or not, I mean, the question getting involved in the market in terms of setting a minimum wage, I would argue, is in fact on behest of the people. But put that aside for a moment. There is no such thing as a market without government distortion. It doesn't exist.
Oh, no, I agree.
It has never existed. So the point is that once the government gives the right of corporations to exist, it then has already, and frankly, once it mints coins and starts to accept it and enforces contracts and does everything else that a government does, the market's already distorted. So the idea that the government distorts the marketplace by imposing a minimum wage is like saying pouring a glass of water on someone who's swimming in the lake is making them wet. It's not.
No, I totally agree with you. Like I said, I totally agree. But I guess what I'm saying is, I just think that, like, in the American economy, there's already so many distortions. Like you're talking a lot about, you know, a guy living in New York, right? But, like, to me, one of the things, the question is, well, why are rents so high in New York? Why? And I think part of that does have to do with government distortions in the market, putting so much money into housing, and, you know, and make turning housing into an investment as opposed to, you know, a thing that the people use. And you know, and personally, I think the American government is evil and is comprised of evil people. They could care less about people making what people making the minimum wage do.
I think that there are government regulations that are bad, and there are government regulations that are good. And I don't care what's in the hearts of Chuck Schumer if he votes to raise the minimum wage. I don't care if they're evil, if they do things that I think help people. So, I mean, you know, I think you're conflating some aspects here. But let me jump. I appreciate your call, though.
Wait. Can I just ask you one more question, though?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just curious, though. I just wonder, though, if you don't think in some way that it is it problematic to have the government making those decisions? I mean, the government is already making all these crazy decisions, like going to the war in Iraq.
All right, I'll answer your question. Let me answer your question. No.
Yeah.
I don't think it is problematic any more so than my breathing is problematic when I am also sucking in pollution. The fact of the matter is that there is no market without the government. It doesn't exist. So there are some decisions that the government makes that I think may be problematic. There are others that I don't think they are. But the idea of even talking about government interference in the market is in and of itself a concept that is silly, because the government creates the market. The market does not exist without the government. And so the idea that you can have a situation where there is a market without government interference does not exist any more than unicorns exist. So the question is, to debate and to argue about specific policies that the government does, but to say it in blanket terms, is it a problem to have the government interfere in the market? No. That's silly, because the government already interferes in the market. They created the market. That's interference in and of itself. All right, got to jump. Appreciate the phone call.
Thanks, Sam. Thank you.
Let's go to I'm a race baiter. Oh, my God. Elevator operators and gas station attendants? Did the minimum wage also kill off telegraph operators and military cavalry on horseback? Is this professor just a character that Richard Kind is workshopping? This cannot be real. The professor is wrong. The Civil Rights Act spurs civil litigation, not criminal actions. Woolworths would not go to jail for violating it. They would be sued for damages, not charged criminally. Well, but I think he would argue if they don't pay for the damages and they ignore a court order, then they could go to jail.
Can I just say really, really briefly, because I feel like this gets overlooked every time the civil rights conversation happens because it's obviously just so insane it's even happening to begin with. But they always say, and in prepping for this, I had to read some of this guy's stuff, and he sounds just as crazy on the page. And they always deploy the, well, it's unethical, and naturally as a market response, there'll be alternatives created.
Well, I want to talk about that, because that's a joke, too.
Well, whole history of Jim Crow and everything, like, again, every time we have experienced this in reality, the answer they say that is forthcoming from the market has never occurred.
Of course. And frankly, look, you know, his argument is Woolworths can deny this guy a seat at the counter. And what will happen is it will create desperation in that consumer. They'll be willing to pay more for a lunch. Someone else will open up a shop that will reap the profits of what Woolworth is doing. But if that's the case, how do you explain Woolworth acting in that way in the first place?
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, why would Woolworth knowingly turn away potential revenue? Because people don't work that way. They're not always rational economic actors. That's not even to ask, well, what if there's one guy, one black person who's denied at Woolworth's, only one black family in that town? Who's going to open up a restaurant and make profits off of them?
I'm taking it in the other direction. Say he was even right in that scenario, which is disgusting. We do see markets like that. Those are markets like cash checking services and all of the things where poor people who can't have access to regular financial and banking services end up getting ripped off because they're forced into a specialized market.
They don't get ripped off. That's impossible to get ripped off if you know, according to him.
I'm not saying it's the same as the civil rights.
I mean, people should understand.
Like, every way you look at this,
here's the way I approach this. I wanted to argue with him on his terms. I could end the conversation in a minute by saying, you know what? It's not ethical to deny black people a right to go in and eat at a counter based on the fact that they're black. It's not ethical. And here's how I know. Let's ask everybody in our society. That's the way we're going to measure ethics. There's no ethical premise there. We could end the conversation there. So I like to argue with him on his terms as possible until it takes you down into, hey. Sammy Cameron, do elevators in libertarian land design, manufacture, install, and maintain themselves? How is it that libertarians are able to precisely value productivity? Who measures Professor Block's productivity to ensure his salary never exceeds his actual productivity level? Beyonce, oh my God, libertarians are some of the most entitled, insufferable people in the world. Sam, you have the patience of a saint. This guy is the weirdest libertarian yet. I didn't really think anything could beat, well, the Nazi grunts weren't really evil. Now let's discuss the minimum wage, but here we are. Rowan, did this professor just scold you like a 4-year-old on your own show? I hate to be stuck sitting through his lectures if he displayed that level of dickishness to his students. Mofalin, we're not talking about numbers. We're talking about human beings. Jay Tingle, got to give the professor his due. He really does care about young black men. The guy's arguments could be transferred directly to any sort of denialism. I'm thinking vaccination or global warming, but I have no doubt that he would use the same argument technique to just demonstrate that there's no such thing as homosexuality. What is the 95% of empirical evidence that a minimum wage causes unemployment? I'm pretty certain you meant to say sexual orientation, not preference. Yes, indeed. I apologize. So if I use no fatties in my personal ad, am I violating the Civil Rights Act? It makes the bar for academics look quite low, but this standard only applies to people willing to work for wingnut welfare and universities that depend on. Reminds me that Yale attempted to hire Juan Cole, but was blocked by unnamed elements. But the Bass family attempted to fund a chair at Yale, provided they get to choose the professors. I don't know how he got a doctorate in economics. Well, there's a school of thought from Austria that was exported to Chicago. Let me jump. Can't read all of that. Sorry. Kevin 11, 721, 6 breaths of air an hour is better than no breaths of air, Sam. Your guest should not count your time spent explaining his work positions as time on the clock, because what we got into this debate, you explained once he said we followed him by reiterating it. You're taking on two roles as moderator and opponent. As soon as Sam the moderator is done, your guest demands equal time. Matt or Michael should have moderated. When he complained about only getting 10% of the airtime, you should have reminded him 10% is better than nothing. Indeed, I laughed out loud when I saw that. Monorail, productivity has quadrupled since the 70s. Wages and minimum wage have not. Professor would be okay with tying productivity to wages? A lot of CEOs aren't going to like that. Thank jeebies, I never had a professor as bad as this guy. Neo Progress, it's not unusual for employers to make a profit that's two or three times more what they pay their employees off that labor. The idea that they're going to start laying people off because they can't make a profit after a small change in the minimum wage is absurd. Change in the minimum wage will indeed make the machinery more competitive, but it will also reduce the need for people to have a second job. The net change in unemployment is not significant compared to the main effects. These are both good things for society. Don, it's almost sweet how Professor Block believes so firmly that employers pay workers what they're worth according to their productivity. It's a strange combo, being really offensive and idealistic about human nature. Without that being true, as his whole premise falls apart. Thumbprint Gallery, not professors, really whiny. Are you serious? Professors talking way more than Sam. Private schools would also be able to discriminate against whoever they want. In professors' fantasy libertarian world, that would deprive the economy of valuable potential of human capital, not to mention what it would do with wealth inequality. Canine Cats. So the professor's only answer to questions he wants to answer and questions he doesn't want to answer are you're interrupting him. I think he sees you as one of his students. Sam is in trouble of getting a B- in his graduate class. When is the professor moving to China or Singapore? XRX. How about him not being accepting the idea that $6 an hour doesn't allow a single individual to pay rent? Cheapest apartment at a studio, I think, was in Mount Vernon for $800. Even with a roommate, 3 or 4 hourly rate to pay, an hour's job ratio is acceptable. I wish people would be honest about this issue rather than only talk about theory. Well, that's the thing. He won't talk about empirics or anything but. That guy was filibustering in the most patronizing, condescending way, Sam. You were way too nice. Kenny Pick, try better, harder, not to interrupt me, Sam. Does the professor oppose laissez-faire speech? Eric, 22, every time the guest claimed you went on for X amount of time, he exaggerated and followed up by going on for more amount of time than he called you going on. Classy move. Could your next question for this guy be, please elaborate? Dr. Radman, please. Sam, I've said this before and I'll say it again. As a discipline, economics is conservative. So if you take a poll of all economists, this guy keeps suggesting. Now, there was one by University of Chicago, was it? Booth School of Chicago that said that's not the case. As economists tend to be concerned with efficiency above all else, I prefer a less efficient system that is less exploitive. Okay, 20 minutes later, I'm not sure I see any coherent argument, even on efficiency in his part. J.P. Weaver. Yes, professor, you're going on too long, blah, blah, blah. Don't interrupt me, blah, blah, blah. Jesse, am I confused? Was Frederick Douglass bisexual? Lawyer Matthew, what a D-bag. False equivalence between who I want to have sex with and who I serve in my business, unless, of course, I run a brothel. Cheney and Bushes, what an effing bitch. He can't have a conversation. Let me speak several pages worth of bullshit and remember all your counterpoints for 5 minutes until His Highness is finished speaking. The guy threatening not to come on the show again is like Adam Sandler that's threatening to stop making movies. N1, does this guy understand what the cadence of a conversation is? It sounds to me like he spent too much time talking at students over whom he has authority. Should have asked whether he believes it's illegal for a business to lie to customers, and it stands to reason that lying to your wife should be illegal. After all, commerce is the same as personal interaction, right? Oh, that's a good one.
You know what part I really enjoyed about that is when Sam would be playing the moderating role and explain what his positions were. And I knew, of course, that he would say, yes, that is what I wrote. Those are my positions. But there's still every part of me is thinking he's going to get aggrieved and interrupt and say, I never said that. But the one thing that he was never upset about is like, I absolutely did say slavery wasn't such a big deal. Yes, you're quite correct that the Civil Rights Act is the moral equivalent of slavery. You're right about that. Now, if you would please stop interrupting me with data and be a little bit of a civilized human being in free association, that would be great.
CDB. Hey, Sam, this libertarian hasn't explained or even addressed the fact that productivity has risen significantly while wages remain stagnant. This is based on data accepted by economists. This guy has spoken way more than Sam has. Well, this is all stuff for next time. I just sat on my balls. Best episode ever. Sam, I'm going to let you finish, but is six more than zero? Avedon. Woolworths wasn't refusing to serve black people. The protest was not against war. The protest was against the law, which prevented Woolworths from serving black people. Fun to know where he talks about it that way.
Hypothetically, though.
Iron Chink. Sam, you don't apologize for interrupting. Four sentences of nonsense is better publicity than two sentences of a hypothetical world. Can't he understand that four is better than two? You own the means of capital for the show. So by his own logic, why would he complain about any of your interruptions? A square. Wow, enrollment in this guy's class will increase after the discussion is posted. Empiricism be damned, like all of the libertarians. There's a place in libertarian heaven for you, Sam. K9 Mutt. I almost ran off the road with this guy. I'm a 63-year-old woman with an engineering degree in Texas. To say my work is only worth minimum wage, which is all I can find, is a pile of horse crap. Made for majority. This guy is awful. You shouldn't let him push you around so much. You're too nice, Sam. Screw him if he's not having fun. It's your show. I'm not going to answer your question. I want uninterrupted airtime. When you ask me the same question multiple times in your show, I'll make no attempt to advance the conversation or dialogue. As a listener, I promise you I won't be disappointed if he refuses to come on your show. For the market-determined price, you have to assume no transaction cost. Perfect competition and price talking by firms. A lot of enlightenment comes when we realize none of those things actually exist in real life. The genius says, Sammy, disconnect this guy. I was taught people never say shut up in polite society. If there is a public road leading to Shay, Jose, and Maria that everyone's taxes go to pay for, well, then public utilities, they better serve everyone. Cheney shot the dog. Hey, Sam, please don't interrupt my IM. I'll let you go on for 5 minutes. Now you will read this IM. Wise line in part. God, what a whiny victim mentality. Raises problematic ideas about liberty, but doesn't want to be accountable for them. Let's go back to the phones. Calling from a 601 area code. Who's this?
Hi, Sam. This is Nate.
Hi, Nate. How
Thanks
you doing?
Thanks for soldiering on. Yeah, pretty good. Thanks for soldiering through that ordeal.
My pleasure.
That, you know, it's pretty interesting to me that you could go to the University of Loyola or you could just go down to the street corner and talk to a crazy person and get basically the same economic theory. You know, the businesses, they make $9 every hour, so then they just give the employees that $9, right? That's how it works.
Well, they must make $10 an hour, and then they give $9, they keep $1 for themselves.
Right. So they know exactly, you're going to get exactly $10 an hour, so we give you $9. That's pretty simple, you know, and
well,
heterosexual
is not 10 better than 9? No, in fact, you didn't even say better. Is not 10 greater than 9?
That's true. You know, if your kid is sick and you've got a $1,000 bill to take them to the hospital, which is better, 6 or 0?
In fact, I should have asked them, hey, can I pay my bills that way? My phone bill, $80 this month. I only got 7, but it's better than nothing.
That's right. It's $20. I got 1. That's better than nothing.
Well, yeah, it was.
And then, you know.
Go ahead.
And heterosexuals are the victims of homosexuals. Is that how it works? Like heterosexuals are bad because they're not homosexual? I mean, I don't think he really gets it.
No.
That nobody's really attacking heterosexuals in this country.
I don't think he gets it either, but I think he thinks that they're discriminated against.
Right.
I don't even think he was. I think it was just even more simplistic. He was just trying to basically draw a completely demented parallel between the idea that no one would object to you being able to freely choose among consenting adults who you have sex with a company legally discriminating against somebody. He was saying that was literally the
but
point
is,
of that whole
I mean,
diatribe.
I appreciate the call, man. I got to jump.
Out of his mind.
All right, thanks, guy.
But there was something interesting, and I'm sure a psychiatrist could deal with this more, about how his only examples just coincidentally also lined up with the active prejudices of those on the right. Like he could have said, hey, if your name is Mary and Bill won't sleep with you, can you sue him for discrimination?
Let's just take a random example. Black people. Gays. All right, Jews.
Benghazi.
Fine. Benghazi.
You call him from a 404 area code. Who's this?
Sam's Don from Atlanta.
What's going on? Don, what's happening? Wait, do we have the song? Hold on, Don. Wait a second. Wait a second.
Oh, no, I don't have it up yet.
What?
Give me a second.
God.
Well, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Don.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, that Professor Block was a classic libertarian, and I was upset until I realized, oh, wait a minute, he's full of shit. This guy's a classic misdirectionist. Whenever you would say law, he would say ethics. When you would say economics, he would say justice. When you said slavery, he would say the theory of free association. It's like nailing jello to a wall. So, yeah. You know, he's full of crap. And no one said anything about anybody going to jail. He's just you know, always trying to misdirect, always trying to throw you off your game. And you stayed on point, Sam, and you're awesome for that.
Oh,
but
I appreciate
also, did you kind of... No problem, but did you kind of get him to admit to destroy corporations by saying that if those guys were liable, they should go to jail when, you know, the reason why people form corporations is because they don't, you know, they can have somewhat less liability?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's part of his philosophy. He doesn't believe that, he believes that there should be that level of corporate accountability. I mean,
I noticed him going from that to pivoting to, yeah, but I mean, everything can't be a Mercedes.
Right. Well, yes. And it was a ticking bomb. You know, I don't know. I mean,
an Arab plants a bomb just randomly.
Well,
freaking Arab.
Go ahead.
with people like that, man, with libertarians, those dudes, man, they're basically like parasites. And what they want to do is they want to lie dormant and let you and me and everybody else do all the work, form a society, and then build a country. And then once the country reaches 98.5 degrees temperature, they want to become active and then fix everything. If you take their philosophy, try and build anything, it'll never work. Because at essence, libertarians are extremely selfish, and it's every man for himself. And you cannot build anything that's gonna last more than the next winter or next summer harvest if you don't have people working together. And I don't understand how they can't see that when they call in and ask about minimum wage. Yeah, the market has figured out the minimum wage. It's called China. That's the, you know, bare minimum wage that people will work for and people can get paid. The reason why, you know, you were making the points to this guy about the minimum wage in New York City, of course you have to have a certain amount of money to live. If you have $6 an hour and it takes $10 an hour, you might as well make no money.
Right.
But he was simply coming back with that six is better than zero. Six, not better. Six is more than zero, and that's like a child's argument.
Yeah,
I wish the Democrats could do to the Republicans what you did to that guy,
right.
And that is basically a lot of the Republican philosophy is just like libertarian. When you ferret it out, when you take it to its logical conclusion, it makes no sense. Man, Sam, you've got the patience of Job. I appreciate the program, man, and you know. Keep up the good work. Right?
Thanks for the call, Don. I appreciate it. And I will just say that it's not like they wait for the society to develop and then they spring. The idea is that they reverse engineer it from where they are in a position where society is organized in such a way that it benefits them. And they want to maintain it, to put in Walter Blockistan philosophy to impose that on society now would basically be what you had in the fall of the Soviet Union. It would just be like, who's going to get the guns? The guy with all the money. Who's got access to the capital? It's these former officials and some oligarchs. And that's what you get, some type of feudal system until, of course, maybe you get some type of authoritarian regime that comes in to sort of
the examples he used is the most free. I mean, that's a whole other road to go under, but it's astonishing. These guys talk about Hong Kong, China, Singapore. I mean, those are your examples of free models. You're advocating a policy that
it's
looks
empirically
like
proven that they are most free, even though empiricism is really you can't go.
Well,
by
look, I would say that 97% of anybody who understands economics would say Hong Kong is free. But let's not focus on that.
You would agree that 5 is greater than 3, would you?
Hi, Johnny. That's wait. Hi, Johnny. Sam, your guest's conflation of buying things and sexual preference makes me want to slam my head against the wall until I black out. Sorry, meant orientation. 6 Granzo, compulsory bisexuality is the future of gay conversion therapy. You heard it here first. Obama, Cheney's, my God, this is pointless. This guy is playing a game, not arguing a point. I don't think he understands. It translates to god-awful radio. Magic Cube, hey, why did you interrupt that last M? He's got something else to say. Pterodactyl, you have the patience of a saint. He keeps talking about pricing workers out of the market when CEO worker pay ratio is now 1,001. Raising the minimum wage is not just about fairness. It's about preserving democracy. Guy's delusional. Pay and productivity haven't kept pace since the 70s. They call it the Great Divergence. Gray Rat, oh, my God. I had to install the app just so I could IM you and thank you for one of the most entertaining interviews of all time anywhere. No matter how painful it was for you or the audience, thank you for not hanging up on him and proving yet again that all libertarians are morons. Also, I presume Michael is busy resuscitating Matt from paroxysms of laughter. Postman, Hong Kong, not so much economical freedom for songwriters or inventors or designers. NY Kate, upstate, I thought he was rude to you, Sam. He was a little bit, but I'm a big boy.
Hey,
LB, even libertarian professors are delusional and whiny. What people don't who don't think the market will solve everything don't seem to understand is that without regulation, the market would set wages at zero. What wage is offered has nothing to do with productivity. There's no inherent productivity in a person. Cheeseburgers, if you don't, what a condescending prick. If you don't have any good ideas, just complain about you're being unfairly treated. It's called working the ref. Dolink, I meditated before the show to have a relatively calm start to the day. Then I listened to Professor Blockistan. You were great. I guess it showed that the libertarian with degrees are even full of more arrogant, condescending certitude than their holy information. I hope you'll fulfill a succession about possibly never returning to your show. I applaud you for your graciousness. I'm going to have to meditate again. Man, that fell asleep. Hey, please don't have that guy on again. Andrew Dice K, what just happened? This is why I love this show. I think it's unlikely I will not have him on again. Sam, stop interrupting IMs. It doesn't matter if you're breaking up long rants with attempts to focus the discussion and not make an unpleasant rant from a person who lives in Fairyland, but instead something that resembles radio. Abingdon Jeff, wow, what a whiny guest. Hey. Also, segregation was generally legal enforced in this country, so a business right to freedom of association with all races generally didn't even exist. So his argument for segregation doesn't even work on his own terms. Crusher, stop interrupting is the emeritus libertarian way of having phone trouble, which he still had. I love the show this week. Every day you guys have been on Turbo, Progressive America. Thank you. Sam, would you call yourself Professor Cedar when you're on MSNBC from now on? It seems like what this dude did. Long Doggy, Sam, the way to end a libertoon filibuster is say literally, I can't hear you. That's the rule. You should know that by now. You didn't really have an intelligent discussion, but I think it's impossible, Professor Doolittle. But seriously, if wages don't keep up with productivity, you can't evaluate the exact worth. I can't read all of that, Long Doggy. We're up against it now. Okajik. Sam, shut up. Is killing wrong? Yes. What about self-defense? Answer, yes. Therefore, there's no absolutes in ethics. This guy is nuts. His worldview is essentially flawed because he believes wages currently equal to productivity. Read the Brooklyn Kelly. The failures of our economy, instability, looting are not due to government regulation, but lack of it. Indeed. Spay F. If a meal costs $7 and you have $6, then 6 equals 0. I just sat on my balls. I love Michael's four-word joke summed up on what took him an hour to argue. Scott Ricketts. Well, this funner half is way more funner than yesterday. You need lunatics more often. Hey, give me more fun stuff like cuts to unemployment benefits. Enough with the funny. Jeremo! Thank God he didn't say being okay, being a slave is okay for 6 months. Nelly girl, I'm grateful that I missed most of the interview. Not sure that I want to go back and listen as he is an ass. A $6 an hour after taxes, transport, you can't do shit with what's left over. Let's go back to the phones. Got a couple more minutes here. Calling from a 716 area code. Who's this?
This is Tom from Western New York.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I'm all right. I wanted to say a few things, but I know you're running pretty long. The real quick, I don't understand, especially the guy that called from Brooklyn. In order for a state to an economy to exist, you require a state, because I mean, corporations and that are filed under LLC and all that require state recognition in order to exist. So I don't understand how that's
well. Even if you want to put out currency, even if you want to have any type of economic activity, the reality
is. I just want to move on.
Go ahead.
The real point I want to call is, let's say that, you know, Professor Block gets his dream and all the libertarians get their dream. They have this somehow stateless economy, and they set up a bank, you know, or a restaurant or a gas station, whatever Block was talking about, that it was his dream position for an ownership. Let's say he has that business, and I walk in with two of my friends with AR-15s, and we say, give us all your money or you're dead. And so they hand over their money because they don't want to die. Okay, so we have their money now. How is he going to stop us? Who's going to investigate that crime?
We didn't get into that. I think he would say, let me answer on his behalf, although I don't know that he would say this. I believe he says that would be a violation of the non-aggression principle, and the state should exist to enforce contracts and prevent a narrow set of what I deem is inappropriate crime.
But so then a state exists in that scenario.
Yes, but maybe if I do have him back, that's what we'll get into.
But I'll say, but who's going to pay for that state? Because the taxation is theft, Sam. I'm not going to pay those taxes.
That's the question I would like to ask him. And if we have him back, we'll do it that time. And look, I appreciate the phone call. Listen, the reality is that I enjoyed it, and I think I would enjoy it even more the next time around.
Well, I enjoyed it too, but hey. Don't interrupt.
1504, the professor specializes in the use of the logical fallacy, filibustering and demanding no interruption while distorting your argument, ignoring facts. He substitutes his own anecdotes because he doesn't like facts. It's way easier to attack your own straw men. Rypop Phil. No, so Sam, he is saying that he can pay for what he wants as long as he has sex with all of his employees equally. Sorry, it's taking me so long to get to the IMs. There's literally hundreds of them. DX Fool. Hi, Sam. Caught the former representative Barney Frank on Seth Meyers last night and can scope out part for airing on your show about why corporations only get fined when caught, but management doesn't go to jail. Don't know about the facial hair, though. Also, Meyers has way too many, has too many USB on alum, like a guest, like Matt Walsh. Lamontrone. Sending you and the professor the bill because I just had... ran my truck off the road because of laughing so hard. Hey, don't interrupt me. We got to pull that sound. Kyle, you are the best in the world with whatever happened on that call was. It may be hard to explain this to your dad, but he should be proud. Agnes, one good thing the professor said, corporations can't go to jail. Piera, Sam, entertaining interview. Where did this guy get his degree? Fat Albert's University. Ronald Reagan. Also, I'm changing my M handle to I just shat on my balls. My bush chained. You liberals won't be laughing at libertarians in a few years. Don't you see the looming threat of quantitative easing? And the final I am of this glorious day. 1005. I remember how Block mentioned on the job training. I remember all zero of my helpful training at my minimum wage job. Ladies and gentlemen, as many of you by now are aware, yesterday we had a little debate between myself and a professor of an endowed chair of economics at the business school of Loyola. The professor's name was Walter Block. I was apparently quite rude in interrupting him several times, and he responded in kind. Here's an example.
Hey, shut up!
And... but we did have more substantive exchanges than that. Now, just for the record, the professor was concerned... while he stated on the program that he felt that he had only gotten 10% of the time to explicate his positions, which mainly dealt with the minimum wage and how discriminating against a black person who seeks to sit at a lunch counter was no different than a gay person discriminating against a straight person by not having sex with them. I think that's a fair assessment of what he said. But just to make it clear, obviously, if I am functioning as the host, I'm going to get a little more time.
And let's also be fair, 10% is better than nothing.
And 10% is better than nothing, in the words of Professor Block. Or I should say more specifically, I think we all know that 6 is greater than 0. You got to listen to the whole thing to really understand what I'm talking about if you're one of those few people, apparently, who weren't listening. Now, I will also say, take this with a caveat. The professor did make the case that empirical data is often useless, I guess, in attempting to argue whether or not a policy is sound. But with that said, apparently there is some empirical data on the question as to how much time the professor had in our exchange versus me. And Matt, would you please present the findings? Now, I have not, this is not peer-reviewed.
This is courtesy of listener Death Leopards.
And I would encourage our listeners to come up with their own data to so that this can be peer-reviewed data. But Matt, would you please, or Data?
Okay, please. Here are the debate talk time statistics. Walter Block, Professor Walter Block,
yes,
comes in at 31 minutes and 44 seconds. Sam Cedar, the host of the Majority Report, comes in at 20 minutes and 58 seconds. Mm. Also an interesting little statistic. There were a total of 19 hey's and one shut up.
One shut up. And speaking of hey, shut up.
Hey, shut up!
Circus. Sam, Tom Hartman had Walter Block on his program back in 2010. Block employed a very familiar chess strategy. I suggest watching all of it because it reminded me of your debate. What? Oh, my gosh. Oh, he played that his keyboard. No, that's not. Sorry. Let's see where it goes.
They could find a place to sleep.
Well, do you play chess by any
chance? How is that free?
Do you play chess by any chance?
I do.
Do you play with a chess clock?
No.
Well, in a chess clock, what you do is after you move, you hit your clock and the other guy's clock runs.
Oh, clock, you said. I thought you said cloth. Yes, oh, I've played chess with a clock, yeah.
Well, so far we've been at it for, 6 or 8 minutes. And
right, and we have 1 minute left.
And I haven't said anything hardly, and I thought you wanted to get my ideas on this, and you haven't let me speak.
I haven't.
No, hardly.
Okay, you can have the last minute.
Well, that's wonderful. Thanks for giving me the last minute. But next time we have an interview, if you'd let me have a sort of a chance to get my ideas across, I think.
Please present your idea. How is it that this enhances freedom?
Well, let me answer it this way. I think people have a right to discriminate, and if people who support this sort of a thing were really serious, what they would do is demand compulsory bisexuality, because heterosexuals and homosexuals discriminate against half the human race, whereas only bisexuals don't. And unless they call for compulsory bisexuality, they're not serious about their own views.
See, I don't think that that's a legitimate reductio ad absurdum, or however you pronounce it. We'll leave it at that. It's food for thought. WalterBlock.com.
Oh, my gosh.
Food for thought. I'd be like, and we are calling mental health services at Loyola, and they will be visiting you soon, Professor.
I am genuinely hurt by that. I honestly now, like, it's one thing to, I don't mind it when he says, shut up. But I honestly, I feel somewhat heartbroken now.
You thought the chess metaphor was just for you.
I just honestly, I don't know why. I mean, I think it's
Oh, God. I'm going to need to take a break, I think.
Oh, Jay! Walter Block!
Walter! Oh, I,
Walter!
Well, shoo-shoo, I thought that...
I thought you only said racist, irrational things on my program. And I thought you only interrupted me with random, bizarre analogies and then complained about your speaking time only to me. And then I see you running around with Tom Hartman.
In 4 years, the dude hasn't had the ability to come up with a new, like... Have you ever played chess? All right, we're back. This is the song that's burning up the airwaves, the one that you wanted to hear, folks. Here it is, the remix version, version 2 of the Walter Block mix.
Hey, shut up.
Do you play chess by any chance? Hey, shut up.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Not the greatest editing job ever, but I thought it was pretty good.
Sage and apple pear.